Hello and welcome to West End Dumplings, the radio edition. My name is Christian Cassidy and welcome to the show. Coming up today, we're going to be talking to some folks from the ABC Railway Project, which is currently winding its way through the prairies. And a little bit after that, we'll talk Marshall McLuhan. But first, a little bit of music. And this is Johnny Cash with I've Been Working on the Railway on 101.5 UMFM.
In the morning, see the little puffer bellies all in a row. Some folks go to work and others take vacations. One took Melinda to California. Oh, don't go, Melinda, please don't go. You didn't see the tea cakes I brung you from the fair. I've been working on the railroad all the livelong day. I've been working on the railroad just to pass the time away. Can't you hear the whistle blowing? Rise up so early in the morn. Can't you hear the captain shouting? Dinah, blow your horn. Oh, Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow your horn? Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow? Dinah, won't you blow your horn? Someone's in the kitchen with Dinah. Someone's in the kitchen, I know. Someone's in the kitchen with Dinah, strumming on that old banjo and singing fee-fi-fiddly-i-o, 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 strumming on that old banjo. Some go to work and others on vacation. One of them took Melinda to California.
And there we go. That's Johnny Cash with what most people think of as a children's song. That was I've Been Working on the Railway, on the Railroad, being American, of course. And I played that because on the show today, as I said earlier, we're going to catch up at the ABC Railway Project. And throughout the month of July, these four researchers and photographers have been traveling the prairies following the Grand Trunk Pacific Railway's main line and its so-called Alphabet Railway. Construction began on the Grand Trunk Pacific in Winnipeg in 1905. So Union Station and the Fort Garry Hotel are some of the local remnants of the Grand Trunk Pacific. And it stretched up after Portage, kind of follows the Yellowhead Highway. So a very interesting project. And joining me on the show today, if the telephone gods work with me here, because they don't always do that, it's the project's lead, Diane Bryden, and I've caught up with her somewhere in Alberta. Hello, Dan.
Hi, Chris.
Hi. Oh, you sound great.
Thanks.
So, how are you?
We're great. We're a little tired. We've been shooting long days every day, and then getting home at night and trying to work up the photographs. But it's so great to be out here. And I have to tell you, I am somewhere in Alberta in Jasper.
Oh, okay.
The village of Jasper, which is the terminus of the Alphabet Railway. So it's a perfect moment for you to talk to me.
Oh, terrific. So you're at the end of the journey.
We're at the end of the journey, but now we have to go back to Winnipeg.
Ah, yes, make your way back.
So that's right, but we have driven the length.
So for people who may have heard the expression Alphabet Railway, what does that mean? What part of the Grand Trunk Pacific was, does it have that nickname?
When they built the Grand Trunk Pacific Railway, they named all of the towns along the line in the what they call the Prairie section, from Portage la Prairie to Jasper, alphabetically. So Portage la Prairie is ground zero, if you will, and then the very first flag station, the whistle stop station, was Arona, just west of Portage, and then Bloom, Kay, Deer, Exira, okay. Ferdale, Greg, and on and on and on.
And how many alphabets did they get through?
They got through five, and they started a sixth one just after Edson, where we stayed last night. But it was a little complicated because the Grand Trunk Pacific went almost parallel with the Canadian Northern Railway that was existing. And so it was a little bit mixed up, and it's kind of hard to tell which stations were Grand Trunk Pacific and which were Canadian Northern. And then they were merged into Canadian National and became one line, and it didn't matter anyway. So we're having a little bit of a difficulty trying to figure that out, and we're at the Jasper Yellowhead Museum and Archives today to try to help us do that because they have the history down pat.
Oh, terrific. Now, for you, this has been a kind of a personal interest for a long time. And, and I think of the four, you're the only one with, like, even though it's a few generations back, you have a personal connection to the alphabet.
I am the only one that has a personal family connection, but another one of the team of four fabulous photographers, female photographers, did her master's degree in the University of Manitoba and did her research on the impact of the railway on settlement in Manitoba. At Queen's University in Queens, but in Kingston, but did go back to Manitoba quite often and traveled the roads quite a bit. So she really was an expert for us. But from a personal point of view, yeah, it's me and my connection to my family.
And how did that connection come about?
The Grand Trunk Pacific bought 6 acres from my great grandfather James Bryden, who farmed homesteaded just west of Portage, and built the rail line right through the middle of his quarter section and passed it about 50 feet from the house, which shook the house every time a train went by. It was kind of scary when I was a little girl visiting, but people who lived there got used to it.
Okay. And how did this go from being like a personal interest to, to a 1,500-kilometer road trip with three other people?
I learned about the Alphabet Railway in a historical geography course I was taking at the university, and I thought, that's a really, really cool. And then I was working in Saskatchewan for 5 years in the 80s, and I happened to be going to a meeting in Yorkton on the way from Saskatoon, and I drove by Fenwood, Goodeve, Hubbard, Ituna, Jasmine, and I thought, it's the Alphabet Railway. And I went in, and I took a look at some little towns, and this was about 30 years ago, I think. And even then, they really captured me, and I said, I'm coming back to photograph them one day. And so time went on, and I retired a few years ago and talked to a few of my friends who are photographers, including this person I spoke to, Judy Wiesinger, who's the researcher on the trip. And they jumped on board, and the four of us have been on the road. Sadly, we had to say goodbye to Judy and Marina yesterday. They flew home to Ottawa. So it's just the two of us that have come to the end, and we'll drive the van back to
Winnipeg. And let's give them all credit. Who are the four women by name?
Cheryl Hoffman is originally from Hamilton. Judy Wiesinger is from Ottawa, and she's the researcher I talked about. Maureen Reese is a photographer from Ottawa, and I live in Ottawa as well, my Diane Bryden.
And I understand that each of you are, take a little bit of a different lens that you're looking at these communities through?
Yeah, it's been a real team effort, and it's been wonderful. Marina's a terrific portraitist. So she has let me start over by saying, in every community we go into, somehow we meet an interesting character, a great person who's a terrific resource for us. And Marina has very quickly develops a rapport and takes a picture of them and gets the kind of the story. Cheryl's very interested in the community that people have set up, especially communities that were established by immigrants. In the past, and also interested in the kind of immigrants that are moving into some of these communities now. Judy, in addition to her historical interest, really wanted to go around and capture the beauty of the town. Some of them are in quite a lot of decline, but there's beauty everywhere you look. Mm-hmm. And I've been really interested in trying to see what vestiges of the past are still around. Can you still see the street pattern if there's no buildings? Can you see, are there any buildings around? So that's what the four of us are doing.
And, I mean, you started off in Manitoba, Arona, the town, mm-hmm. which actually is just a point on a map. It was never actually became a town. And I understand that was kind of a theme going through Manitoba, that there were a lot of either towns that didn't exist anymore or that were in their last gasp. You said there's only a couple that were left.
There are only a couple that are left. Justice, Manitoba, is a little tiny village still. And Ferndale still has a house and a school. But everywhere, and I guess Oakner, too, has a few houses around. Some people just have a home. Rivers, Manitoba, of course, which was a divisional point for Manitoba, it's still going strong. But there aren't very many places. And we went to the archives in Manitoba. The Library and Archives have a Winnipeg branch with all of the CN records, and we found as many town plans for these places as we could find.
Okay.
And there are places, there are town plans for Hart and Greg and Ingelow, places that if you go there now, some Hart and Greg both have elevators. I think they're privately owned now. They still have a station master's house in place. Until recently, Hart had a store, but in the last 5 years, it's disappeared. It was abandoned, obviously, but an old store has disappeared. But there's still a community there, and in every single community in Manitoba has been great about putting up cairns and the memorials to the pioneers that established the places. Not so much in Alberta, we're finding.
Oh, okay. Now, the smallest community you've come across, and we won't mention it by name, but had a single aging resident.
A single resident
left.
Still there, yes. And this resident was the last postmaster in the village, and she was distributing mail to 11 people at the end before they closed the post office down. So she gave us lots of information.
I can imagine. But she must know, I mean, was there a bit of sadness talking to her? I mean, she must know that when she passes on, that's it. That's it for the community.
Yeah, I guess so. Someone has put up, and perhaps her family has put up a sign that says, here stood the last store and here stood the last post office. So they're very proud of the fact that there was a community there. And she told us stories about living in houses that were made of railway ties. She, her husband, her father, and her grandfather were all worked on the railway. Her grandfather worked on the Grand Trunk Pacific back when it was started. And so she's used to picking up and moving to different railway towns. But she's lived there for, I think she said, 58 years. So she's pretty established there.
Oh, wow. And, you know, as much as you know, when people see your Facebook page, which we'll say ABC Railway Facebook page, you are posting pictures and things like that. So as much as this is a celebration of some of these communities, it must be a bit of sadness, kind of, because you're watching, you know, you're actually documenting kind of the end stages of you know, what was once a mighty railway and a bunch of great communities.
Yeah, and I, you know, time after time we go through it, and there's a book called What's in a Name in Saskatchewan that explains how the town got its name and how and any development. And it will often say it had two stores and it had a pool hall and it had a garage, et cetera, et cetera. And none of them are there anymore. And it's really sad to think, but people went there with dreams and somehow those dreams changed and they moved on somewhere else. But it really hit me when I was in Tate, Saskatchewan. And it really was quite a booming little town, and there was a cairn to the pioneers that had been put up in 1983, clearly by some people that really wanted folks to remember there was a town there, and there was grass growing over it. And I couldn't help but think, what did the last person think when they packed up their box and they were the last person to walk out of that town?
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, that must have happened everywhere, but it really hit me in Tate for some reason, maybe it was a bunch of Scottish settlers and my ancestors were Scottish. Maybe that's why I identified with that one more. I don't know, but it just really hit me there.
Now, are you noticing, you're saying there aren't many communities left along Manitoba. Have you noticed a difference when you go through Saskatchewan and Alberta?
Yes, definitely. In Saskatchewan, there are a lot of little tiny communities, some with only 34 or 75 people in, but they have a community hall and might have a garage in it. They've got a village council that are looking after the community. They're still having mail delivered. They don't have mail. Some of them don't have a post office anymore, but they have mailboxes. But there's still definitely streets, and there's definitely houses still there. Some people, if they're living near cities, are moving out into these towns and establishing a residence and working in town. Maybe that's why they've hung on.
That's true, and that's something you wouldn't have in Manitoba, because Manitoba, you have like one big city.
And Brandon.
And then Brandon that has rivers near it, which has probably, helped rivers a bit. But, say in Saskatchewan or Alberta, you have more larger centers kind of spread out.
Yeah, and the railroad is still helping rivers. It is still the divisional point there, and there's still where the crew changes, and they need to have places to stay and to be fed, et cetera. So I think the railroad is still really helping rivers. In Alberta, I think possibly a lot of these towns now are located near coal fields or oil fields, and that has helped.
Okay.
But there's a lot, the towns in Alberta are very prosperous compared to the ones in Saskatchewan, and then compared to the ghost towns in Manitoba.
Now, as I mentioned before, you are documenting your travels on a Facebook page. And,
that's right.
What's that been like? Because I know people that do some great travels and stuff, and I'm always saying, keep a blog or put on a Facebook page, and they're like, what's that experience been like?
Well, there's a little bit, you feel a little bit of pressure because a lot of people are following along with us now to make sure you get things up. And as I said, when you do it 12 hours, you're on the road 12 hours a day. That's the great thing about being in the prairies. You've got 12 hours of sunshine, but it's also a curse because you're having to, let's just shoot a little bit more. And then you have to get home and work up the photographs and post, and then you still have to sleep somewhere in there. So we're feeling a little bit of pressure to do that, but we'll get them up there. And then the other pressure is there's so many wonderful pictures and so many wonderful stories to tell. We can't do it all in a Facebook page, but we are going to be, we're finalizing some blog posts right now. We thought we would do it as we went, but we're finding that the blog posts are actually, the more we see and digest it, it's actually a little bit richer in terms of the stories.
Okay.
So that's why we've waited a little bit with that. So it's been fun, and people, we give out cards, we go to every community, and they join on the Facebook page, and there's some exchanging and telling us about stories, and one fellow got a hold of us before we got to Vera, Saskatchewan, and so we went to see him, and he showed us the town site, which we never would have found on our own, and told us a little bit about what it was like to live there when he was a child, and it's been wonderful. It's been
great. You're finding people welcoming and happy to see you and willing to talk about their town?
Well, many people are proud to talk about their town. Some people have just moved there recently and don't know a lot. But what we've found is to go into the cafes when there are cafes, or we've gone into seniors' homes and talked to people in seniors' homes. Some people, if we don't get the cards out fast enough, the phone calls who are these people taking photographs of our houses in town? But once they hear about what's happened, then they start telling us stories.
And that's great. For prairie people, I know so many people who just those little towns and that stretch of prairie in between point A and, if point B is the cottage or, wherever they're going, is just you got to whiz by there as fast as you can and not stop and not look.
And they're not even on the main road lots of times. We're spending a lot of our time driving down secondary roads. And I'll tell you what we're finding is after a while, if we get away from the railway tracks, we have to go find those tracks, first of all, to get our bearings. But if there's a side road or a county road that go along the tracks, we'll take it anytime. Get off the highways, and that's where you see some wonderful things.
Yes, that's true. And even if it's not a community, you'll see little community halls or old one-room schoolhouse or something like that. It's really amazing what is out there if you
pull off
the highway and take the side roads to where you're going.
Yeah, and especially in Manitoba, as I said, there's some excellent. They did some great work at putting cairns out to commemorate the pioneers and the. In their particular communities. So we're finding that more than in Alberta, for sure. So be proud of that heritage, Manitoba.
Yes, absolutely. Now, so people are keeping in touch with Facebook. You do have plans for a blog that's going to start up, I guess, you know, after you get back to Ontario.
Well, we're working our way back, and we're going to stop in a few places where we want to spend a little bit more time.
Okay.
But there won't be as much photographic material. So we'll have a chance to do a little bit more blogging as we're on our way back. But yes, that's true.
Do you have a blog address already?
I do, and I should know it in my head, but I don't. It's a WordPress blog. If they go to the Facebook page,
okay,
when
yeah.
it's up and running, we will be linking from there. So
if
they're interested, people can find it that way.
Great. And what are your other future plans for this? You're going to have a huge amount of, you know, be it historical documents and thousands of photos. And, you know, I think you were saying there was some audio or video clips in there and something like that. You're really going to end up with a huge Prairie history.
That's right. Well, our hope is that we can publish a photographic book, for starters. We would also like to do some kind of a virtual presence with them. We'll see how that works out. We want to do some kind of artistic piece with them. The photographs alone are artistic, but then some kind of a compilation. And then when we compile all of our notes and get everything in order and all the photographs, the entire collection will be given to an archive so that we can document the information about the Alfred Railway from one end to the other.
No, that's true. Because with the way these towns change, you 5 years from now, that could be an incredibly important document because more
that's
of these
right.
towns will be gone, more of these elevators will be gone, more.
That's
it doesn't
right.
take long on the prairie for... a town to, go, well, downhill, I guess you want to call it. But, you can really lose a lot in a town over a small period.
And I think Manitoba, Saskatchewan, and Alberta have to be grateful for the farmers that have bought the grain elevators to use privately, because some of those prairie castles still exist as a result. We were just in Chauvin a few days ago, and a family has bought the elevator there. They may not even use it, but they just didn't want to see it go. It's beautiful. They've painted it, and they've kept it up. But we talked to so many people who felt sad when the elevator went. It was like they were exposed. It was the anchor to their town, and it's disappeared. And we did hear from one woman when we were in Lenny, Saskatchewan, that she said it's a good thing you're taking pictures because there's a contract out to bring that down this summer. Even next year it won't be there. So, yeah, it will be a moment in time, for sure, the elevators and churches and existing houses and things that we've seen on the road.
Yeah. Well, that's terrific. I think we covered everything. Was there anything I missed? Any shout-outs you want to give or anything?
We'd love to give a shout-out to Via Rail. We're going to ride the rail for a little bit of the way, and taking pictures from the train. We couldn't do this story without that. And the shout-out is to the Winnipeg Free Press and the Brandon Sun and the Rivers Banner, all those people who have supported us and talked about our story, and you, Chris, for this radio interview.
Yes.
And I hope people are interested. Please visit the Facebook page. And I do have the WordPress email address now.
Okay.
It's dibry01 at wordpress.com.
WordPress.com. Well, terrific. Well, Dan Bryden of the ABC Railway Project, safe travels back, and look forward to the blog posts.
Thanks very much, Chris.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
And there we go. So time for a little more music, and I got a couple of kind of railway-related songs, but going to play a little bit of Burton Cummings right now, Running Back to Saskatoon here on 101.5. UMFM.
We'll be right back. Irish monkeys. Been working on cars. Moose jaw, small view, moose hole in two. Running back to Saskatoon. Red deer terrace in a medicine hat. Singing of the prairie tune. Singing of the prairie tune. Talking to playwriters. I've been working on words, phrases. Who's gone soft, you who's holding to? Running back to Saskatoon. Red deer terrace in a medicine hat. Singing of the prairie tune. Singing of the prairie tune.
They got me. I never thought they would. That 10 counts finally caught me. It really got me good. Money don't mean much when all your dead. It's funny how you lose touch with all the things you say. And I had all the moves. I could have been a real contender, but the dream just seemed. And it's gone. looks like they got me. I never thought they would. That 10 counts finally caught me. It really got me good. And I had all the moves. I could have been a real contender. But the dream just seemed to end there. And it's gone. And it's
gone. Summers are short on the prairies. This year, it seems even shorter because there's been enough rain to put NOAA back in business building a big boat. A state of emergency was declared in several communities in central and southeast Saskatchewan because of flooding. In Manitoba, it's been the worst summer in recent memory in the popular cottage area known as the White Shell. Just like it is for farmers, too much rain is no laughing matter for people whose entire year depends on those few weeks in the summer when people long to drop most of their clothes and enjoy the warm sun. When it's not raining, it's been generally too cold or windy to kill mosquitoes with fogging trucks. Dragonflies are a great natural solution to the problem, but we never seem to have enough of them. Did I tell you about Gimli, the Icelandic fishing community on the shore of Lake Winnipeg? Aside from a fabulous cultural history that should be known in the larger world, Gimli made international news this week for, wait for it, fish flies. They smell like rotting fish. And this summer, there are so many of them, they've been known to cause highway collisions when vehicles slip and slide on them. Yuck! By the time we hit August, the fish flies will be gone. Next year, we're promised there won't be nearly as many. Back to Saskatchewan, the moose are having a good year. Not far from the legislature, there was one of them swimming in Wascana Lake recently. Rumor has it he had a message for Brad Wall, but the premier was not in his office. Chances are he was either driving west to get to East End, or maybe north to get to Southie. Don't get me going about love and climax. Hope you're having a great summer and not wearing socks. I'm Roger Curry.
Well, hello. Welcome back to West End Dumplings, the radio edition for this July the 17th. Kind of a prairie theme for the first half of the show, the ABC Railway Project. Then we went into that was Running Back to Saskatoon, and that was a live version by Burton Cummings himself, and I think it was from a live recording in Massey Hall, which, you know, when you think of it, for a guy, I think that was 5 or 6 years ago, his voice is still incredible. Also, Gary Felgard, and that was The Real Contender, and that kind of dedicated for all those little railway towns that started with such hope and promise 100 years ago, but never made it, fell off the track somewhere along the way. And last but not least, that was Roger Curry. You may recognize his voice from either the CBC or CJOB. He was a longtime morning man at both of those, and he's doing a lot of work now with CJNU, Nostalgia Radio, and thanks to him for letting me play some of his commentaries. So we're back, and we're going to change gears a little bit now and talk about Marshall McLuhan. Now, Marshall McLuhan grew up in Winnipeg, but the reason we're talking about him is he was born 105 years ago on July the 21st, 1911. Actually born in Edmonton, grew up in Winnipeg. The family home was on Gertrude Avenue. He attended Gladstone School, Earl Grey School, Kelvin, and the University of Manitoba, and also something called the Alice Leone Mitchell School of Expression. And I kind of stumbled across her. I ended up doing a blog post about it, and she was kind of a elocutionist, a dramaticist, and her mother, or sorry, McLuhan's mother, was a big fan of hers, would often have her over to the McLuhan house to give speaking lessons and things like that. And she ended up kind of pushing Marshall McLuhan to taking some of the classes with her. And he actually credits in later autobiography Leon Mitchell as somebody who really helped, you know, build his confidence and be able to speak in a lecture hall, be able to project his voice properly, and things like that. So so a lot of Manitoba connections. After he graduated here from the University of Manitoba, he got a Bachelor of Arts and a master's degree. It was on to Cambridge, where he received a PhD, and he became a professor of English literature, and of course, how most of us know him, a renowned communications commentator, visionary, really, on mass media and things like that. And he's widely recognized as the pioneer of media studies, including media literacy. And he coined a few phrases that he's kind of famous for bringing about, such as the global village and, of course, the medium is the message, which is probably his most famous one. And he died in December 1980. But, 105 years ago, he did a lot of stuff at the U of M here. And actually, if you – I won't give you the big, long – web address, but if you Google Marshall McLuhan and, you know, University of Manitoba, and I think the actual page is called McLuhan the Manitoban, and the University of Manitoba Library has put together a great page with a lot of his photographs, a lot of his writings. He wrote a lot for the Manitoban, the newspaper that's here. So they've kind of put aside some of his school writings, his Manitoban writings, and other things he did while he was at the University of Manitoba, all in one page called McLuhan the Manitoban. And it's kind of an interesting look back. So I'm going to play a few things for you here. The first one will be a song by The Vestibules, the Ballad of Marshall McLuhan. And then about a five-minute clip of him on the CBC program This Hour Has 7 Days from 1966. And he's speaking to interviewer Robert Fulford. And he talks about the coming of something that sounds an awful lot like the internet, many years before the internet was around. And this is from there's a great YouTube channel. I'll say it, it'd be hard to find, I'm sure, but My Web Cowtube is the YouTube channel. And this guy's put together dozens and dozens of both long-form lectures, which are sometimes a little hard to listen to when it comes to McLuhan. What I prefer is the interviews. You know, some of them an hour long, some of them five minutes long. Put together a really great collection of McLuhan stuff. So if you want kind of a primer to put your feet up tonight and listen to some McLuhan, that's My Web Cowtube YouTube page. And I think after that we'll have DJ Spooky versus Marshall McLuhan. And DJ Spooky, pretty awesome, cutting up some of Marshall McLuhan's own words and into an interesting song. So here we go. Marshall McLuhan for the rest of the half hour, and I'll talk to you soon.
Once upon a time there was a town where chaos reigned. Lawlessness was everywhere, and there was no cohesive theory existing which properly explained the mass media and their impact on society and man's thinking. And then one day a stranger came riding into town, and all the townsfolk gathered round and asked him his name. Well, he tipped his hat and he said, Marshall, Marshall McLuhan.
Marshall. Well,
they gave him a star and put it on his chest and gave him his own office with his name on the door. Well, wouldn't you know, the very next day a fight broke out in the Last Chance Saloon. It was an argument concerning the externalization of the senses and its subsequent effect on man's psychological makeup. It was about to come to blows when Marshall stepped in and he said, Boys,
a theory of cultural change is impossible without knowledge of the changing sense ratio affected by various externalizations of our senses.
Marshall McLuhan, you're such a groovy thinker, and we really dig what you say, 'cause you've got the best in
insights into mass media. This side of the Rio Grande.
Well, then came the fateful day when a tall, dark man all dressed in black came riding into town. All the townsfolk ran inside and locked their doors and hid. And the bad man stood in the town square and he called out for Marshall McLuhan. He said, "Marshall, I don't agree with your description of television as a tactile medium in the context of a visual notion of causality." So Marshall shot him.
Marshall McLuhan, you're such a groovy thinker. The best insights into mass media, this side of the Rio Grande. Marshall McLuhan, Marshall McLuhan, Marshall McLuhan.
You've been writing about the mass media for a good many years, and now you're an object of the mass media. How has this changed your view of it,
Let me instead explain why this has happened. Because, you see, suddenly, if you've noticed, the mood of North America has changed very drastically. Things like the safety car couldn't have happened 10 years ago.
Why is that?
Now, it's because people have suddenly become obsessed with consequences of things. They used to be obsessed with mere products and packages and launching these things out into markets and into the public. Now they've suddenly become concerned about what happens when these things go out on the highway. What happens when this kind of program gets on the air? They want safety air, safety cigarettes, safety cars, and safety programming. This need for safety is a sudden awareness that things have effects. Now, my writing has for years been concerned with the effects of things, not their impact, but their consequences after impact. TV, unlike the fantasy world, the escape world of the movies, TV creates enormously serious and realistic-minded sort of person, well, almost oriental in his inward meditativeness. I think
this is the teenager of today.
Yes, he's becoming almost oriental in his inwardness.
He's so thoughtful and serious.
Yeah, grim. Whereas the movie generations of the 20s and 30s were a coon-coated bunch of superficial types, had a good time, and went to college, but not for knowledge and that sort of thing. All has changed.
And changed because of television.
Television gave the old electric circuitry that is already here, gave it a huge extra push in this direction of involvement and inwardness. You see, the circuit doesn't just simply push things out for inspection. It pushes you in to the circuit. It involves you. When you put a new medium into a play in a given population, all their sensory life shifts a bit. Sometimes shifts a lot. This changes their outlook, their attitudes, changes their feelings about studies, about school, about politics. Since TV, both Canadian and British and American politics have cooled off almost to the point of rigor mortis. Our politics require much more hotting up than the TV medium will give them. TV is ideal. You see, when you've got two experts like ourselves discussing TV, this is good TV because there's a process going on of mutual challenge, discovery, and processing. Now, TV is good for that, and same with ads. If the audience can become involved in the actual process of making the ad, then it's happy. It's like the old quiz shows. They were great TV because it gave the audience a role, something to do. They were horrified when they discovered they'd really been left out all the time because the shows are rigged. Now, this is a horrible misunderstanding of TV on the part of the programmers. But in the same way, most advertisers do not understand TV media. Do you know that most people read ads about things they already own? They don't read things to buy them, but to feel reassured that they have already bought the right thing. In other words, they get huge information satisfaction from ads, far more than they do from the product itself. Where advertising is heading is quite simply into a world where the ad will become a substitute for the product. and all the satisfactions will be derived informationally from the ad, and the product will be merely a number in some file somewhere. Instead of going out and buying a package book, of which there have been 5,000 copies printed, you will go to the telephone, describe your interests, your needs, your problems, and say, I'm working now on the history of Egyptian arithmetic. I know a bit of Sanskrit. I'm qualified in German, and I am a good mathematician. They said, it'll be right over. And they at once Xerox, with the help of computers from the libraries of the world, all the latest material just for you personally, not as something to be put out on the bookshelf. They send you the package as a direct personal service. This is where we're heading under electronic information conditions. Products increasingly are becoming services.
What kind of a world would you rather live in? Is there a period in the past or a possible period in the future you'd rather be in?
I'd rather be in any period at all, as long as people are going to leave it alone for a while. Just let go. Just leave it now.
But they're not going to, are they?
No. So the only alternative is to understand everything that's going on and then neutralize it as much as possible, turn off as many buttons as you can, and frustrate them as much as you can. I am resolutely opposed to all innovation, all change, but I am determined to understand what's happening, because I don't choose just to sit and let the juggernaut roll over me. Now, many people seem to think that if you talk about something recent, you're in favor of it. The exact opposite is true in my case. Anything I talk about is almost certainly to be something I'm resolutely against. And it seems to me the best way of opposing it is to understand it, and then you know where to turn off the button.
Time is a time for crossing barriers, for erasing old categories, for probing around. When two seemingly disparate elements are imaginatively opposed, put in opposition in new and unique ways, startling discoveries often result. The medium of our time, electric circuitry, profoundly involves men with one another. Information in force, information. Writing was an embalming process that froze language. It eliminated the art of ambiguity and made puns the lowest form of wit. The expert is the man who stays put. Writing destroyed word linkages. The simultaneous interrelation between many levels of meaning in the word had to be sacrificed to keeping everything moving on a single plane on one level. The word became a static symbol, applicable to and separate from that which is symbolized. It now belonged to the object of the word. It could be seen. It was a thing. Now came the distinction between being and me and me and me and me. Writing was invented, man lived in acoustic space, boundless, directionless, horizonless, in the dark of the mind, in the world of emotion, by primordial intuition, by terror. Speech is a social chart. The trouble is, I keep thinking of improvements on these passages all the time. Our time is a time for crossing barriers, for erasing old categories, for probing around. When two seemingly disparate elements are imaginatively posed, put in opposition in new and unique ways, startling discoveries often result. The medium of our time, electric circuit, profoundly involves men with one another. Information in force,
There we go, and welcome back to West End Dumplings, the radio edition. And that was, let's see, what do we have there? A little bit of Marshall McLuhan on This Hour Has 7 Days, The Ballad of Marshall McLuhan from The Vestibules, and that last one was DJ Spooky with DJ Spooky versus Marshall McLuhan, celebrating his 105th anniversary of his birth, which will be coming up a little bit later in the week. And let's see, coming close to the end of the show here, what can I tell you about? We're talking about kind of prairie events, and if you want to see some Canadiana, I know that the RCMP musical ride is taking place in and around the province. I think they started like last week, like maybe July the 7th or 8th, and they're playing about a dozen or 13 shows, and they're going kind of top to bottom. I think they started in like Thompson, and then they're going to end up in Selkirk and Winnipeg in early August. I think August the 2nd is their last Manitoba date. So, you know, that's something worth checking out. And depending on the community that you go see them in, some of them are having different you know, after events where you can tour the stables or meet the riders and things like that over. If you go to the RCMP website, there's a link right off the main page to, like, RCMP Musical Ride, and you can click, and like I said, they're spending all of July, a little bit of August in Manitoba, about a month's worth, about a dozen or so shows. And let's see, what else do I have? You know, I think that's about it. I was so excited to have the ABC Railway Project on the show earlier that I didn't write up too much else. If you check out the Winnipeg Free Press today, the Sunday edition of the Free Press, there is a story on the ABC Railway project written by me, and you can see some of their photographs in it as well, especially in the dead tree version. Always looks better in the online version. But if not, be sure to check out their website. And I think that's about it. Next week, I have author Jeff Amy. He's written his first novel, and I'm going to have him on for most of the hour, and we'll see what else we can pull together to entertain you with. Stay tuned on 101.5 UM FM, because coming up next, we have Lyle and Waxy's Dargle, and Gail and the Comfort Cafe comes up after that. So stay tuned to 101.5 UM FM. And just to finish off that prairie theme that we've been kind of keeping to all show, this is Prairie Town by the Waylon Jennies. And we'll see you next week. Thank you.
white tufts of your vapor trail have sprouted and taken root. It's like you're out the big shiny wheel where candy floss is born and grows as a stick turns, spinning out your vapor trail. Well, I head north, stopping at the stations with rainbow diesel stains, saying accents of teenagers, and hills not black but green, rolling out to the sea as you're spinning out your vapor trail. These people